She's a very thoughtful, kind person. And Angela Merkel's a leader. She's not a follower.
I look at her as a sympathetic figure, as a decent human being who is ruthlessly pursuing what she considers to be the right path. My disagreement with her concerns what that path is.
I would describe her as pragmatic and reasonable, not bad qualities for a politician to have.
She's a very strong and determined woman, but she uses that strength to inspire, not to intimidate. So she brings people together rather than putting them against one another.
She is a problem solver. You know, she's a manager of a situation.
Her ability to share the plain truth with her own people is an immense political achievement. This is Merkel's success.
Mrs. Merkel is not complicated. She's quite transparent. She's respectful and demands to be respected.
Strong-willed, firm, decisive.
Nobody could doubt Angela Merkel's political competence, her political skill, her tactical brilliance. What I think has been lacking has been strategic vision.
I appreciate her as something of a mosaic, because there's many parts to her. The delegate, Dr. Angela Merkel, has received the required majority of votes from members of the German Bundestag and has thus been elected as the first female chancellor of the Federal Republic of Germany.
A woman who, as a young girl, was trapped in a closed society. And here she becomes the chancellor of a democratic, free country.
Allow me to ask if you accept the election.
Mr. President, I accept the election.
It was very clear that she was a very strong character, very easy to underestimate. So I expected her to do well, and I remember saying to my people at the time, she'll be there for a long time. I didn't know she'd be there for that long.
I swear that I will dedicate my efforts to the well-being of the German people, promote their welfare, protect them from harm, uphold and defend the Constitution and the laws of the Federal Republic of Germany, perform my duties conscientiously and do justice to all. So help me God.
Journée particulière à Berlin. Angela Merkel est la première femme élue chef du gouvernement dans l'histoire de l'Allemagne.
No one expected she set the pace for women all over the world that we can do it.
She was the most unlikely chancellor for Germany. She was a woman, and Germany had never had a female leader before, a divorcee, and more importantly, from the GDR. So in every which way, she was possibly the person that you would have expected least to get the top job.
Angela Merkel was born in Hamburg on July the 17th, 1954. Soon after, her family moved to communist East Germany, the GDR. She graduated from high school in 1973, studied physics in Leipzig, and earned her doctorate in 1986. Shortly after the fall of the Berlin Wall, she entered politics and became deputy government spokeswoman for East Germany's last prime minister, Lothar de Maizière.
She was an advisor to the new CDU of East Germany, and we met for a coffee. And I found her very pleasant, very smart, incredibly determined, asked lots of questions, very inquiring. But who could have imagined what would have happened to her afterwards? I certainly didn't.
In December 1990, she won a direct mandate for the Christian Democratic Union in the Bundestag elections. In 1991, then-Chancellor Helmut Kohl appointed her to his cabinet as the Federal Minister for Women and Youth.
That's when I met her. She was relatively nervous, which is very surprising from today's perspective. But she was young then and lacking in European experience.
Merkel served as federal environment minister till 1998. Underestimated by many and derided as Kohl's girl, she became the CDU secretary general after the party's defeat in the 1998 federal elections. 2 years later, she was elected party leader.
I accept.
In 2005, she ran against incumbent Chancellor Gerhard Schröder and won. At the age of 51, her victory made her Germany's youngest chancellor.
Who would have thought the highest office would go to a woman so soon?
The day after Merkel assumed office, she departed on her first official state visit to Germany's most important European partner. In Paris, she was welcomed by French President Jacques Chirac. It was the first of well over 500 state visits over the next 16 years.
Mrs. Merkel got to know four presidents of the French Republic with four very different personalities: Jacques Chirac, Nicolas Sarkozy, myself, and Emmanuel Macron. She was careful to adapt to each of these personalities and to build a personal relationship that went beyond governmental matters.
Avec chaque président de la République.
The very next day, Angela Merkel arrived in London for her first official visit with British Prime Minister Tony Blair.
Well, I was very keen for her to come as soon as possible. I wanted Britain to have a strong relationship with Germany. Because I'd gone on well with her before she became Chancellor, I thought this was someone I could work with and get on with, and therefore, for me, it made a lot of sense to strike up that relationship as quickly as possible.
To cultivate good relationships with fellow world leaders, Angela Merkel soon became a frequent flyer. Germany's ties to one of the world's most powerful countries, the United States, remained crucial. In January 2006, she visited then US President George W. Bush for the first time.
You know, my first impressions that with 45 minutes alone in the Oval Office were incredibly positive. She's smart. She's plenty capable. She's got kind of a spirit to her that is appealing. She loves freedom. Angela Merkel brought class and dignity to a very important position and made very hard decisions. I think it would say compassionate leader. A woman who is not afraid to lead. And now I'm going to take her to lunch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Merkel and Bush seem to instantly get along. The same cannot be said for Merkel's relationship with another powerful leader. She first visited him in Moscow 3 days later, but she dealt with him throughout her tenure. Vladimir Putin. With Putin fluent in German and the new chancellor fluent in Russian, it was expected they'd understand each other with ease.
Ну, так нам казалось тогда. Но, естественно.
Well, that's what we thought at the time. But later it turned out that knowledge of the language, or even the country, though necessary, is not sufficient to maintain and develop special relations between Russia and Germany.
Six months later, the Russian president received the leaders of the economically strongest democracies for the first G8 summit in Russia. It was another first for Angela Merkel, her debut in this club of rich nations.
When she came to her first big summit in St. Petersburg, she was just very calm, very clear. And, you know, no one was ever going to push her around at any of these summits, not from the very beginning. And she has that quiet authority that is effective.
One person, it seemed, hadn't taken note of that authority yet.
I wouldn't call it an extended massage. I'd call it it's kind of a spontaneous reflection of friendship. And I'm sure people, I didn't know what to make of it. But it's, Angela, I'm sorry I did that and put you in the public spotlight. But on the other hand, it's a reflection of my my friendship with you.
Angela Merkel faced down powerful men on many more occasions over the next 16 years, including Vladimir Putin, who provoked the Chancellor with his dog. Petulant former US President Donald Trump and autocratic Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
Angela Merkel has proven beyond reasonable doubt that she is remarkable at chewing up her opponents, especially male opponents, that underestimate her for being a woman.
I think Chancellor Merkel has largely transcended the debate on gender. Her impact really dominated the conversation and drowned out any kind of side chatter about what it means like to be a woman.
In June 2007, the Chancellor hosted her first G8 summit at a Baltic resort in Mecklenburg-West Pomerania. She planned to tackle global problems with her powerful guests.
Sea air is clear air. It helps you put your thoughts in order and focus on what matters most.
In private, she's much more interesting, animated, with a good sense of humour than sometimes she comes across publicly, where she comes across as very, very disciplined, very focused. She's good company, and that's actually important in a political leader. So when she's in private with people, she will speak frankly. You know, she listens, and I think it's an advantage that she appears to be without egoism. So this is, I think, a very, again, it's a trait in a politician that's very attractive.
And she's resolute. But I also saw a side of her that was very compassionate and decent, a kind person with a lovely soul. And that's the person I got to know.
And yet, despite the sunny atmosphere, Merkel met resistance at the summit when she pressed leaders to commit to climate protection. The US president balked at a proposal to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Merkel didn't want the mood to sour, but she also faced pushback from Bush and Blair on another issue: stronger regulation of the financial markets. Just 2 months later, the US real estate bubble burst. Hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their homes. Banks began to falter. Washington pumped $700 billion into financial institutions, but it was too late. The crisis quickly seized the global financial system. European and German banking sectors were not spared. In late 2008, Angela Merkel faced her first major challenge as crisis manager.
The situation on international financial markets is serious. It's unprecedented in this form. It calls into question much of what has been taken for granted.
Yeah, I think one of the things I learned, and I'm sure Angela learned the same thing, is that when you appear to have achieved a certain stability and things look stable and are carrying on in a fairly predictable way, the risk is you think that this stability is permanent, and of course it never is. And so this huge financial shock of the financial crisis was a disaster.
At the time, few European politicians seemed to grasp the extent of the financial crisis, or that it would soon bring entire nations to the brink of collapse.
The European banks were in as much trouble as the American banks, and maybe in more trouble. And I think the great mistake in Europe was to kick the can down the road repeatedly, not realizing that the longer they waited, the bigger the problem was going to get. So I do think that at that point, Angela Merkel was not the dominant figure in European politics. One can't lay all the blame on her. But the European elite generally sleepwalked into the Eurozone crisis.
The EU was faced with its first stress test since Merkel had taken office, when the financial crisis spiraled into an economic crisis. French President Nicolas Sarkozy urged all EU member states to work together to shore up banks and pump money into the economy. Angela Merkel disagreed, calling instead for national solutions.
In the next few months, there is talk of 100 days, but that should be taken symbolically. In 100 days, we will have concrete proposals that will then be implemented.
What sometimes bothered me,
massiv geärgert hat,
really bothered me, was that she was hesitant when it came to big European decisions. Being a scientist, she always approached things from back to front.
Merkel is synonymous with a particular German characteristic, sort of langsame aber sicher, slow but sure. She doesn't shoot from the hip. She doesn't say the first thing that occurs to her. She doesn't make the first decision without consulting and without having a strong knowledge base and without reading her papers.
When international speculators bet against highly indebted EU countries, the euro was suddenly in danger of failing. A spotlight fell on Greece. In October 2009, its new Prime Minister, George Papandreou, was forced to admit that Athens had been understating its deficit figures for years. Now, it could no longer afford to borrow funds to service its debt. Veering towards bankruptcy, Greece urgently needed help. Once again, Angela Merkel took her time making a decision.
We'll, of course, talk to those facing the greatest challenges about how to keep the euro stable.
Initially, Merkel was against bailing out Greece with German taxpayers' money. Her hardline stance was celebrated by the German press and went down well with the public.
The critical thing that she did not do was to explain to the German public that it was in their interests for the monetary union to hold together. Remember, the German public felt almost none of the pain of the financial crisis. Monetary union has been good for Germany. It's not been some giveaway by Germany to Southern Europe. I don't think that message was communicated. On the contrary, it was represented to the German public as if these reckless, profligate, idle Southern Europeans were being given some generous bailout by Germany. In reality, the German banks needed the crisis to be dealt with as much as anybody.
We must not forget that it was the idiocy of banks like Deutsche Bank and Societe Generale and BNP Paribas which created the catastrophe of the euro crisis. And she bailed them out by cynically transferring all those losses onto the shoulders of taxpayers. She will go down in history as the chancellor who allowed that to happen and to label it solidarity with the Greeks, with the Spaniards, with the Irish, when it was no such thing.
Greece was close to bankruptcy, and it was feared the crisis could spread to other heavily indebted Eurozone countries. Despite strong opposition in Germany, including within her own government, Angela Merkel agreed to a huge bailout package.
I fought hard against Germany's position and that of its finance ministry that Greece should temporarily leave the Eurozone. I always believed that anyone who left would never come back. And if one member left under pressure from others, rather than of its own accord, then other members would inevitably also be crowded out.
You've got two diametrically opposed interests, right? The interests of the paying party, Germany, is that we don't want to pay. The interests of the people receiving the payment is we need this to survive. Her ability to chart the way through that whilst not losing her own public and not losing those countries from Europe and the single currency, well, you've got to say that requires a high level of political skill, which she exhibited.
The crisis with the euro is as bad as ever it's been, and tomorrow may come the critical intervention which could save it or sink it.
It won't exactly be press one for default, press two for more austerity, but there are not many options beyond that. The French, German and Greek leaders will speak tomorrow, knowing they are running out of time.
A fierce dispute broke out within the EU and with Greece. Merkel demanded severe fiscal austerity from Athens in return for financial aid. Many Greeks were already suffering economic hardship and took their anger to the streets. Angela Merkel was cast as the villain.
As a Europeanist, I would like her to be a passionate European, to bring the continent together. Instead, maybe by being too dispassionate, she's allowed the centrifugal forces to tear us apart, to create greater inequities and imbalances within Europe, to weaken Europe and Germany in the end.
In the end, Germany did the right thing to prevent Greece from crashing out of the Eurozone, did the right thing to stabilize the peripheral economies, but only at the last minute. And the result was that the pain was much greater than if Germany had acted earlier and behaved more consistently. All the bailouts were last minute. It was ad hoc. There was no strategy to it. And my sense is that that made the Eurozone crisis worse.
She was never one for easy solutions. She tended towards multi-layered approaches that were helpful, but cost a lot of time. And accordingly, a lot of money.
She, of course, defended the interests of her country in these crises. But when there were tensions, when there were differences of opinion, she always ensured that we would find a way forward in the name of Europe.
Europe fails when the euro fails. Europe wins when the euro wins.
I mean, Europe went through a very difficult period. I mean, Greece particularly and other countries went through an agonizing period, and there's still the aftermath of that we're living with. But again, you've got to say, and this is a tribute to her leadership, Greece didn't leave the European Union, didn't leave the euro. The euro's still there, Europe's still there, and, you know, the economies are in a position where they can recover.
But Angela Merkel wasn't always slow to make a decision. She took swift action in March 2011 after a tsunami in Japan damaged the Fukushima nuclear power plant, causing radiation to leak into the atmosphere and sea. The disaster prompted a momentous U-turn on nuclear policy from Merkel, who announced Germany would abandon atomic energy altogether.
As much as I pushed last fall for extending the operating lives of Germany's nuclear power plants as part of our overall energy strategy, I state unequivocally before this House today, Fukushima has changed my opinion on nuclear energy.
Germany says it will phase out all of its nuclear power plants by 2022, vowing to immediately close seven of its oldest reactors. A responsible decision or a nod to public opinion? And what are the global implications of the Germans going nuclear free?
That was the only instance where she made a hasty decision. Too hasty, in my opinion. She usually took her time to find a solution. But in this case, she moved quickly and without consulting France beforehand.
At the time, I felt it was a mistake. But if one looks at this decision from the vantage point of 2021, it looks better. The alternative so-called renewable sources are getting more and more competitive. So nuclear power looks less, I think, crucial to the solution of the problem of how do we have clean energy than I would probably have said if you'd asked me that question at the time of Angela Merkel's decision. So I don't think this was one of her worst calls.
Many people wondered, did she do this out of conviction? That's how she communicated it herself, that she could not have even imagined such an accident happening in a Western industrialized country. I know from sources close to her that she was truly shaken.
Change also appeared on the horizon of the Arab world in early 2011 when a wave of unrest challenged some of the region's authoritarian regimes. Millions of people in North Africa and the Middle East demanded more freedom, rallying for social justice and pressuring their governments to resign. Tunisians were the first to force their president to step down. The protest movement quickly spread to Egypt, where massive demonstrations forced out longtime president Hosni Mubarak.
The people of Egypt have spoken, their voices have been heard, and Egypt will never be the same.
Today is a day of great joy.
We are all witnesses to a historic change.
Although many Western politicians supported the upheavals in North Africa with words, they were in a dilemma. They had long cooperated with the region's entrenched authoritarian governments, both politically and economically. Germany was no exception.
You cannot do business with people, with dictators. You cannot sort of sign deals worth millions or billions of dollars and then say we support democracy and we support human rights. So you need to decide what you want your policy to be. You need to actively be having a policy to support democratic movements in these countries. Had you done that earlier, or had you, you know, if you do that now, then maybe in future you can avoid these problems.
People in Libya and Syria also took to the streets in anti-government demonstrations. The entire region was in turmoil. The Arab Spring, it appeared, had caught world leaders off guard.
With regard to the Arab Spring, I think all of Europe made the grave mistake of not adequately supporting democratic movements. That includes Germany in general, and Mrs. Merkel in particular. Had they properly understood and supported the democratic demands of the Tunisian, Egyptian, and Syrian youth, who had long taken to the streets, I'm sure we would be living in a very different world today.
For me, Angela Merkel's mistake was not the way that she responded to the Arab revolutions. I think the mistake was to fail to anticipate what the consequence would be when those revolutions went wrong.
Well, Germany was very cautious, very, very cautious, and we didn't know what Germany's policy actually was. And I suspect we didn't know because Germany did not know what it could do. It did support people who were fighting or asking for democracy, young men and women who were on the streets in several of these countries. But it wasn't clear what it is going to do to help these people. And it sort of took a backseat.
In Libya, the march toward freedom took a violent turn when strongman Muammar al-Gaddafi refused to step down. A civil war broke out, and Europe was confronted with a difficult choice. Should it stand by or intervene militarily? The UN Security Council set up a no-fly zone enforced by NATO. Angela Merkel was against the move. Germany abstained, as did Russia, China, Brazil, and India.
The Germans are nowhere. They broke ranks with their old European allies and the Americans when the idea of a no-fly zone was being discussed at the United Nations.
We see great risks. The likelihood of large-scale loss of life should not be underestimated.
I think, in principle, Germany is very cautious, and Mrs. Merkel's stance on foreign deployments reflected that. Even though Germany was part of the coalition in Afghanistan, I think Germany should have shown more presence alongside France.
One understands that Germany has an experience, a historically bad experience with conflict in World War I, World War II, so it's, you know, very circumspect. However, even in the recent times, you know, Germany has been very war-averse. It's not in support of regime change.
For 7 months, French, British and US fighter jets flew attacks in Libya. Gaddafi was killed, but the fighting raged on. In the following years, the fractured country descended deeper into civil war. In Syria, peaceful protests gave way to armed uprisings when President Bashar al-Assad refused to yield and unleashed a brutal campaign against his own people. Syria was at war with itself, and Germany faced another difficult decision on how to respond. A choice made no easier by the fact that Russia was Syria's ally. France and Britain favoured providing military support to the opposition, but Angela Merkel was cautious, sensing that Moscow was unlikely to back down from defending Assad.
We must take care that our opponents do not receive even more weapons by countries that take a different stance on Assad than Germany and the EU.
Ultimately, the solution to the problem, from a humanitarian vantage point, was to end the civil war in Syria and stop the Assad regime from killing its own people on a massive scale. Part of what I think characterized Angela Merkel's time as chancellor was a desire to avoid exerting power.
What is it that Germany, in this case, could have done if it does not want to go to war? So if she supported them, the rebels, then would she, how would she answer German people if these weapons or this support, this aid, would have gotten in the hands of the extremists? So this was a very complex situation, particularly in Syria.
And so the conflict escalated and a country was destroyed. While Russia continued to support Assad, France, Britain, the US and Turkey hoped to oust him by backing the rebels. With the major powers at odds over Syria, Angela Merkel sought to negotiate, but all she could do was plea.
We're seeing millions of refugees and hundreds of thousands have fallen victim to this war. This war must be put to an end, and that will only work with a political solution.
Her reputation in the Arab world is very good, and the main reason is because Germany is not a world cop, because you don't go to wars, because you don't say that we're going to come and solve problems and change regimes or, bomb places. Because you don't go to wars, I think you maintained a very clean position. That's for Germany, but also for all these years, Chancellor Merkel has been in power.
Germany is a strong democracy. In my view, it's a beacon for the rest of the world, for liberal democracy, for civil liberties, for human rights, for stability and all of that. But you cannot be that beacon if you sit on the sidelines with the sort of the purity of inaction. You never get your hands dirty dealing with the difficult issues of security in the world. There's almost a sort of German exceptionalism that Merkel continued to propagate.
Islamic extremists exploited the chaos in Syria to gain new footholds, posing an entirely new threat. In Eastern Europe, another nation was slipping into chaos of its own. In 2013, the EU offered Ukraine a package of political and trade agreements. But after long negotiations, President Viktor Yanukovych rejected the deal, citing pressure from Russia. Moscow viewed the accord as a threat, and President Putin was demanding a say in the deal with the former Soviet Republic.
But we were repeatedly told, no, we will not do that. We will not work in a multilateral format. Ukraine is a sovereign country. We will communicate only with Kiev. I think that was the wrong strategy, as it sparked fear and suspicion in Moscow that they were plotting something against us, or that this was all to spite Russia.
Hundreds of thousands of pro-EU demonstrators demanded closer ties with Europe and the resignation of President Yanukovych. His government cracked down on the protesters. Scores died in the violence. Yanukovych fled to Russia.
They just chased him away. End of story. Without any legal justification. But that doesn't mean we opposed broader ties between Ukraine and the European Union. Once again, that would have been perfectly possible, but without a coup. That way, our relations with the EU, and probably to a certain degree with the US, would likely not have deteriorated so dramatically.
Ukraine became a geopolitical flashpoint. Kiev accused Moscow of supporting pro-Russian separatists, who took up arms on Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula and eastern Ukraine. Russia's annexation of Crimea in February 2014 sparked international outrage, and Merkel's relationship with President Putin hit an all-time low. When the US and EU slapped sanctions on Moscow, Angela Merkel supported the move.
When Russia invaded or annexed Crimea and then fomented the civil war in eastern Ukraine, she was incredibly strong. She absolutely went hard on sanctions in the EU. And she didn't just agree with them, she pushed them. And she pushed them to be as hard as they could be.
But Merkel still hoped to find a solution to the Ukraine crisis by keeping a line of communication with Putin open. In June 2014, world leaders gathered in France to celebrate the 70th anniversary of the Allied landings in Normandy. Together with the French leader, she tried to break the ice between Vladimir Putin and the new Ukrainian president, Petro Poroshenko. As the fighting in Ukraine continued, Merkel refused to let up, engaging in shuttle diplomacy with François Hollande between Kiev and Moscow. Merkel's negotiating skills were needed.
In my opinion, she possesses one particular trait that is good for a negotiator and for politicians in general. First, she knows how to listen. Second, she can hold herself back. I would say that characterizes her best. Because when a person gets heated and starts to make a point with steely resolve and stubbornness, it's not conducive to reaching a compromise and mutual understanding.
On February the 12th, 2015, the effort succeeded. In the Belarusian capital, Minsk, after long negotiations, the opponents agreed to a ceasefire.
It worked because we held together in solidarity that night in Minsk. We shared the responsibility and showed a common desire to find a way out of that long night. It was really our joint work, mine and Mrs. Merkel's, and the strength of the Franco-German relationship that allowed us not to solve the Ukrainian problem, because there is still an occupation and tensions in eastern Ukraine, but to end the war.
Once again, Angela Merkel chose communication and cooperation over confrontation, even if she no longer harbored any illusions about Vladimir Putin's politics.
I have come to Moscow today in an uneasy phase of German-Russian relations due to the illegal annexation of Crimea, which violates international law, and the military clashes in eastern Ukraine. Our collaboration has suffered a severe setback. I say severe because we see this as a fundamental violation of peace and stability in Europe.
Merkel didn't mince words, but she also knew there was no viable alternative to cooperation with Russia.
Ultimately, we can't imagine a European security framework without Russia. In consequence, we stand by our position that Russia dangerously violated international law with its actions in eastern Ukraine and Crimea. That's how Merkel always phrased it in our talks with Putin. But we cannot change geography. We need Russia, and Russia needs us.
Angela Merkel, the daughter of an East German pastor, and Vladimir Putin, a former KGB agent who was stationed in East Germany. It's a complicated relationship, sometimes a trial of will, sometimes all smiles and charm.
Putin's got big influence, and he speaks German. And I wasn't, you know, look, he's wily, and he can be pretty tough, but so can Angela. So I wasn't worried about Putin running over Angela Merkel. She can hold her own, and I'm sure she did.
She's got very clear views, having been brought up in Eastern Europe, of Russia, and particularly Russia under Vladimir Putin, which is not to say she doesn't want to have a working relationship, but she's got no illusions.
Despite their political differences, Germany and Russia continued cooperation on Nord Stream 2, a controversial pipeline under the Baltic Sea to deliver Russian gas to Europe. Merkel's support for the project was unflagging.
Angela Merkel, more than most Western leaders, was impressed by Putin and accepted the logic of Putin's argument that he was a source of energy that Europe could not do without. My own view is that she has been far too soft on Russia during her time as chancellor.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake, and I told that to Gerhard Schroeder, and I told it to Angela, you know. I think it's a mistake because, the motivations of Russia can be pretty confusing, and I think the more that a nation that is not an open democracy has a an economic stranglehold on a democracy, it puts people in a very difficult strategic position.
The Ukraine conflict weighed heavily on Merkel's relations with Moscow, but so too did Putin's increasingly authoritarian behavior. Chancellor Merkel didn't let the connection fail, but she never stopped probing either.
I emphasized again how important the right to demonstrate in a civil society is.
What is the end result in 16 years of Merkel's rule? Has Russia improved its human rights record? Has it improved its approach to the international community? Has it improved its observance of the rule of law? Is freedom of expression, are free elections more likely or less likely now in these 16 years? And unfortunately, the answer for all of these things has to be negative.
I believe it will always be in our interest to uphold ties with Russia, even if the values that underpin our political actions differ greatly in part.
Angela Merkel and Vladimir Putin, a relationship marked by rivalry, but also respect.
A solid working relationship has indeed developed between me and Angela. I hold her in high regard. She is a very experienced politician, a direct person, but reliable. When we negotiate something, I can see, and honestly it surprises me, but it's true, that she is a resolute person who can defend her position.
Throughout her 16 years as Chancellor, Angela Merkel repeatedly faced accusations that she was cozying up to authoritarian leaders, like Chinese President Xi Jinping. From the outset, she prioritized ties with Beijing as part of her overall foreign policy approach.
For the last 16 years, she has done a tremendous contribution to the Sino-German relations, but also to broaden the exchanges, economic activities. No European leaders has made so many trips to China as she did.
Merkel also paid more visits to China than any other German leader before her. The agenda of each of her 12 trips was dominated by the interests of German companies seeking business deals in the People's Republic.
The German attitude towards China has been shaped by the strong belief on the part of major German corporations, particularly the automobile companies, that China is their future. And so it's not as if Angela Merkel made up the German-China policy on her own. There was enormous pressure from German business to make that relationship work well.
Merkel isn't solely responsible for the approach taken to Beijing. Large German and French corporations have also played a role. These companies are not particularly interested in human rights and have pushed their governments into signing trade agreements that avoid any mention of human rights.
During Merkel's tenure, China advanced to become the world's second largest economy and Germany's biggest trading partner. It steadily gained political and military power, and its regime has grown increasingly repressive.
China's certainly a problem for the Western world, because not only are they becoming an industrial competitor, but they are pretty autocratic. And, you know, the world has to figure out how they're going to deal with human rights abuses.
Maintaining strong economic ties with China without betraying core democratic values proved a difficult balancing act. In 2007, Merkel provoked Beijing by welcoming the Tibetan religious leader, the Dalai Lama, to Berlin. And she didn't shy from criticizing China on a range of issues.
I'm certain the topic of human rights is one we'll continue to discuss in future meetings. That includes the freedom of religion and the freedom to express one's opinion. Human rights and related issues are an intrinsic part of our talks and relations.
Merkel spoke up every time China committed human rights violations, even if that led to friction with China's presidents.
But Angela Merkel's appeals failed to boost democracy in China or secure more freedom for its people. Instead, Beijing cracked down on Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement. It beefed up mass surveillance to monitor its own citizens and repressed ethnic minorities with increasing brutality. Still, cooperation remained Merkel's key strategy. In 2020, she pushed a European Union investment deal with China over the finish line.
I will miss Angela Merkel's attitude to China in particular. She understands, it seems to me, that China is too complex to classify as either black or white, good or bad. The engagement between the European Union and Germany in particular and China at the economic front has always been very important.
We have to recognize each other. We have to accept each other. We have to work with each other. We just can't say, oh, if you have changed, if you didn't converge, become one of us, we're going to bash you. We're going to contain you. We're going to be view you as an evil empire or something like that.
Wir müssen uns
in our approach to China, we have to accept that it is and will remain a trading partner. But within that relationship, we must never be naive.
Never be naive. Merkel would come to learn that also applied to relations with allies. The German Chancellor instantly hit it off with the new US President, Barack Obama. They were not an obvious match. Obama, the charismatic orator, and Merkel, the former physicist. And they didn't always see eye to eye on political issues.
I remember she saying about Barack Obama that charisma only gets you so far in life. In other words, yes, you can charm the crowds, you can make great speeches, but ultimately it's down to the paperwork and it's down to the rigor of the decisions.
We can be a little more informal among friends.
Obama appreciated Merkel's analytical approach to problems and valued her as a close international ally.
She's always been somebody I can trust and somebody who I think deeply believes in the role that Germany can play and that all wealthy nations can play in not only making our countries better, but also making the world better.
Grüß Gott.
During his 8 years in office, Barack Obama visited Germany more than any of his predecessors. The two leaders genuinely seemed to have a good time together. But their relationship hit the rocks in 2013 when it was revealed that the US National Security Agency had tapped Angela Merkel's cell phone. The scandal shocked Germany and ruptured its alliance with Washington.
On the subject of the NSA, I have made it clear in discussions with the American president, spying on friends is unacceptable.
Obama apologized to Merkel for the affair. He maintained he had known nothing about the surveillance, which he said had begun under his predecessor, George W. Bush.
I, of course, had no idea that we were spying on Angela Merkel. But yeah, I mean, that's not the definition of friendship. And she had every right to be straightforward in her criticism.
Not just Angela Merkel. Brazil's president, Dilma Rousseff, was also a target of NSA eavesdropping. The two leaders pledged joint action against espionage.
No fim de semana, presidente Dilma discutiu segurança nas comunicações eletrônicas com a chanceler alemã Angela Merkel, que também foi alvo da espionagem americana.
Fizemos projeto de resolução comum entre o Brasil e a Alemanha.
Brazil and Germany have submitted a draft resolution to the United Nations. And what does it state? It states that this is indeed a violation of human rights, as well as of the integrity and sovereignty of nations.
Da integridade da soberania dos países.
Obama's administration watered down the anti-spy resolution. Angela Merkel remained pragmatic, knowing that on the world stage, holding a grudge was counterproductive. She simply couldn't afford to stay mad at Germany's powerful ally.
We need to rebuild trust, which implies that trust has been shaken.
Cooperation is difficult without trust, but the mounting crises in the world could only be solved by working together. Thank you. In 2014, the terrorist group Islamic State launched a campaign to take over parts of Iraq and Syria. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed or displaced. To push back the militants, the US-led coalition, joined by France and Britain, targeted the so-called Islamic State with airstrikes. This time, violence spread into Europe. On January 7, 2015, two gunmen raided the offices of the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo in Paris. 12 people were killed that day, traumatizing the country. Angela Merkel was in London visiting British Prime Minister David Cameron and immediately pledged Germany's support.
What happened today in Paris is a barbaric attack against our European values. We condemn it. Our thoughts are with the people of France.
Une marche qui rassemblera des dirigeants politiques, donc syndicaux et religieux, mais aussi donc des chefs de gouvernement étrangers, l'italien Matteo Renzi, l'espagnol Mariano Rajoy, le premier ministre britannique David Cameron, mais aussi également Angela Merkel, la chancelière allemande, sera à Paris. Elle apporte le soutien sans faille de l'Allemagne dans cette lutte contre le terrorisme.
Moi, je serai...
I will always be incredibly grateful to Angela Merkel for the stand she took when France fell victim to terrorist attacks. Germany was our most valuable friend through these times. She was able to express solidarity with gestures. Angela Merkel came to Paris. She took the initiative and was the first to say she would join a mass demonstration against the threat of Islamic extremism on January 11. That shaped our cooperation in the fight against terrorism. It was very important for Franco-German relations and for the personal relationship between myself and Merkel. It fostered enduring respect and appreciation.
In the summer of 2015, Merkel faced one of the most consequential decisions of her political career. Millions were fleeing war and persecution in Syria and other crisis regions. Many sought refuge in Europe.
And there you had a caravan of the world's most destitute finding their way through these hustlers on these dangerous boats, making their way into Greece and Italy and beyond. And everywhere they went, the doors were slammed in their faces.
Everyone was closing their borders to prevent migrants from entering. She took the bold step of standing up and saying, I am going to open my borders and I will allow these people in. She knew she was taking a risk.
We have an obligation to grant refuge to those who deserve refuge.
Hundreds and thousands of Syrians fleeing bombs, fleeing oppression, somehow managing to get to Europe, and then walking to Germany and chanting, Germany, Germany.
The problem is not a European problem. The problem is a German problem. Nobody would like to stay in Hungary. So we don't have difficulties with those who would like to stay in Hungary. Nobody would like to stay in Hungary, neither in Slovakia, nor Poland, nor Estonia. All of them would like to go to Germany.
Hungary is really Europe's poster child for the worst refugee response, where Germany is the best. And now we're seeing France and Britain today announce respectively 24,000 and 20,000 refugees that each of those countries will take in. But remember, over a period of years, whereas in one day this past week, Germany took in 17,000 refugees in one day.
Es ist ja nicht so, wie damals wahrheitswidrig behauptet wurde, dass sie die Grenzen geöffnet hätte für die Flüchtlinge. Nein.
It's not that Merkel opened the borders for refugees. No, she had never closed the borders. To her, it would have been unthinkable to launch military operations against people at the border seeking asylum.
Gegen Flüchtlinge vorgehen würde.
My first reaction was, there's a woman with a big heart. And I'm sure she was motivated by human compassion. It was clearly a tough political decision for her. But she took a lead.
Germany is strong. And our motto to approaching this must be, we've done so much, we can do this.
I was moved. I felt a great affinity to her. I cheered and celebrated Angela Merkel.
We can do this, and if there's an obstacle on our path, we must overcome it.
I know that this decision was not easy for Chancellor Merkel. It took a lot of courage to make that decision, both political courage, moral courage, and the courage of one's convictions.
Wir schaffen das. The declaration, we can do this, wir schaffen das, was a truly extraordinary political U-turn. It ran counter to much that she had said in previous years, including her questioning of multiculturalism, of the possibility of a multicultural society. More importantly, it plunged European migration policy into chaos.
No,
it wasn't a bad decision on Merkel's part. It was a bad decision on the part of the EU. In light of this migration crisis, it proved unable to show solidarity and unity.
Германия не будет возвращать беженцев обратно в Венгрию, об этом заявила Ангела Меркель. Канцлер подчеркивает, что Германия не собирается закрывать границы перед мигрантами и не будет извиняться перед другими странами ЕС за свое гостеприимство.
I think this was a great political mistake. It underestimated the dangers of uncontrolled migration. Allowing that to happen gave rise to an extremely unpleasant populist backlash.
By late summer 2015, Germans were taking to the streets to protest the Chancellor's migration policy. She fought back.
If we have to start apologizing for showing kindness in an emergency, then this is not my country.
I don't think we can blame her for it, although, yes, the decision did change the continent. Perhaps forever. It certainly exposed their Islamophobia. But I think it exposed it. Chancellor Merkel didn't cause it. She didn't make them Islamophobic. She didn't make them fear the other. They already did.
She had to weather the political storm. At the time, large parts of the German public hated her. But a statesman or stateswoman is someone who stands up to domestic pressure. And she withstood the pressure. She is a strong woman.
Some praised Angela Merkel as a politician with a big heart. Others attacked her. Even European partners criticized her policy. Merkel looked for allies, for more countries willing to take in migrants, and she called for a Europe-wide refugee policy. But gaining partners proved difficult. Eastern European countries were especially reluctant. EU leaders convened in Brussels to find a solution. Despite their differences, they agreed on one thing. To stop people from war-torn countries from entering Western Europe, the EU would have to support Turkey, a country long left to care for Syrian refugees on its own. On behalf of the European Union, Angela Merkel travelled to Istanbul in October 2015, seeking help from the government of Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu.
I miss you.
For 5 years, Turkey and neighboring countries like Jordan and Lebanon had shouldered the burden of all these refugees. To European leaders and to Merkel, the crisis was something that was far away. They wanted to stop refugees from entering Europe at the Turkish border, and they unilaterally expected Turkey to play along.
Turkey played hardball. In her meeting with its all-powerful president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Merkel tried to secure a guarantee that Ankara would stop refugees from crossing into the EU. Among the incentives, EU financial aid and the prospect of visa-free travel in Europe for Turkish citizens. In March 2016, the EU and Turkey struck a deal. From then on, fewer migrants reached Europe, even though hundreds of thousands more fled their homes to escape violence. They remain effectively imprisoned inside refugee camps.
Angela Merkel proved herself by letting them in to begin with that she has a humanitarian heart. But what she did a few days or weeks later, when she effectively bribed Erdogan of Turkey with billions of European money to allow, so that Erdogan would allow us, Europeans, to violate international law on refugees that turned Lesbos and other parts of Europe into prison camps, both for the locals and the refugees, and precipitated the closing down of the borders and the electrification of our border fences.
The Turkey deal is ascribed to Merkel. It was the right thing to do. What's wrong is that it is ascribed to Merkel alone. It was the Commission that negotiated the agreement with Turkey.
At the same time, public dissatisfaction with Brussels was mounting in Britain. A growing chorus demanded more independence and less immigration. The answer, Britain's exit from the EU. Brexit.
Brexit might not have happened had it not been for the appearance that Europe had lost control of its borders. The big issue in Britain in 2016 was immigration.
Brexit was a British problem. It wasn't a European problem, and it wasn't a Merkel problem, and it wasn't a refugee problem. Brexit was built at home.
In early 2016, Prime Minister David Cameron pressed EU partners to grant Britain special status, ensuring its sovereignty, above all in migration policy. He got what he wanted in a deal strongly backed by Angela Merkel, who was fighting to keep Britain in the EU.
Going into these negotiations, we are prepared to do everything we can to create the conditions that will allow Britain to remain in the European Union. That is important to Germany. But it's up to the UK citizens to decide.
That decision was put to a referendum in June 2016. Stay in the EU or leave.
2016, I'm afraid, was the worst time to hold the referendum. You had a big immigration crisis in Europe, which, of course, Germany was heavily involved in. You know, we were still recovering from the financial crisis. We had austerity. There were all sorts of other reasons that came into it.
The pro-Brexit camp exploited public fear of refugees and immigration to whip up support for leaving. Cameron's party colleague, Boris Johnson, was among those campaigning with nationalist rhetoric to end EU membership. On June the 23rd, 2016, a narrow majority of Britons backed Brexit. Angela Merkel was not amused.
It is with great regret that we must note today the decision of the majority of the British public to end the United Kingdom's membership in the European Union.
For her, Brexit was a very serious blow, remains a serious blow, and... You know, she tried everything she possibly could to avoid it.
The divorce negotiations dragged on for years, first with the new British Prime Minister, Theresa May. When she quit in 2019, Boris Johnson took over, promising to get Brexit done.
We in the UK want a deal. We seek a deal. And I believe that we can get one. We can do it. Wir schaffen das, I think is the phrase.
Britain ultimately got a deal, and the European Union lost a key member. Nationalism triumphed over European cooperation. a defeat for Angela Merkel and for European unity.
We're going to beat China, Japan. We're going to beat Mexico.
The fake media is trying to silence us.
We're going to build the wall. Mexico's going to pay for the wall. Fake news.
2016 saw Donald Trump win the White House, pledging to shake up the world order with his nationalist agenda.
We are going to make America great again.
In the end, nearly all national leaders put their country first. Donald Trump was just so rude as to say it out loud.
It's going to be only America first.
Following his inauguration, Trump's foreign policy appeared designed to undermine global cooperation and alienate allies. But the US was still one of Germany's most important partners. Angela Merkel was in a bind.
Germany and the US are bound together by values. Democracy, freedom, respect for the rule of law and human dignity. On the basis of these values, I offer to work closely with the future president of the United States, Donald Trump.
A massive blizzard may have thrown a wrench in their plans, causing some to view the storm's delay as a bad omen for the hotly anticipated meeting of two of the world's most powerful leaders, U.S. President Donald Trump and German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
2 months after taking office, Donald Trump extended his first invitation to the German Chancellor to visit the White House. He made it clear he wanted to redefine bilateral trade ties. In particular, he criticized Germany for its large trade surplus with the United States.
I would say that the negotiators for Germany have done a far better job than the negotiators for the United States. But hopefully we can even it out. We don't want victory, we want fairness. All I want is fairness.
It's more than fair that both parties to trade deals seek to profit from their agreements.
Thank you.
Merkel aimed to avoid openly confronting Trump. But the brash U.S. president and circumspect German chancellor appeared worlds apart.
Donald Trump absolutely loathed Angela Merkel. I cannot think of another example of one politician expressing such hot-blooded contempt for another, as he did towards her. He just could not handle Merkel. He didn't like her hyper-rationality. He couldn't handle her calmness. He was endlessly suspicious of the fact that she didn't express herself with a similar form of vulgarity to the one that he had.
Once again, Merkel banked on communication with a difficult partner.
It's much better to talk to one another than about one another.
Perhaps in search of commonalities, Trump revived an old accusation.
As far as wiretapping, I guess, by, you know, this past administration, at least we have something in common, perhaps.
Trump stuck to his confrontational course. He withdrew the U.S. from the Paris Climate Accord that Merkel had fought so long to achieve. He repeatedly demanded that NATO allies, and Germany in particular, increased their own defense spending.
But 23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they are supposed to be paying for their defense.
Even if the two didn't show it, relations between Germany and the U.S. were in free fall.
The times in which we could completely rely on each other are, to an extent, over.
I don't know. That was just not a good period in German-U.S. relations. Germany is a very close ally and a very important friend. Germany is really important for Europe. And Germany's got a lot of sway in terms of helping shape kind of world opinion on key issues. And therefore, it makes sense for a U.S. president to be close to the German chancellor.
With exclusionary populism on the rise, Merkel assumed the mantle of virtually the sole defender of democratic values, especially during the Trump era. As a counterweight to Trump, who sought to cripple and undermine democracy, Merkel came to the fore as the most effective proponent of European democracy and democratic values.
Seine Exzellenz, der Präsident der Vereinigten Staaten von Amerika, Herr Donald J. Trump.
While Trump remained erratic and vindictive, Angela Merkel became the center of gravity for liberal democratic values. And after four turbulent years, she was still holding her ground as Donald Trump exited the world stage. Unlike Trump, who denied the reality of climate change, Angela Merkel made the fight against global warming a policy priority. As host of a G8 summit on the Baltic in 2007, she hoped to get the world's biggest greenhouse gas polluters to set limits on emissions. But she faced stiff resistance.
Angela was very strong on the environment. I don't blame her. Well, I understood the issue. I just didn't want to have a global treaty that didn't include China and India. Otherwise, it was a waste of time.
Merkel's guests acknowledged that rises in CO2 emissions would first need to be stopped and then substantially reduced, but their agreement was largely non-binding.
The final statement from the summit in Heiligen Damm said, "We will seriously consider cutting greenhouse gas emissions in half by the middle of the century." And I was just floored. If you understand the language, you realize that's a completely empty statement. And then the media hyped Merkel up and dubbed her the climate chancellor. But she'd really done nothing to justify that title.
Merkel strove to lead by example. In 2007, her cabinet approved a package to slash Germany's greenhouse gas emissions by 40% before 2020. It included higher taxes on gas-guzzling vehicles, but German carmakers blocked it.
Merkel has always been a staunch defender of the German car industry and protected its lobby, including in Brussels, for example, when it came to stricter exhaust regulations.
Cars remain Germany's top export product, and the automotive industry a powerful employer. Merkel could not and would not meddle with this powerful sector. Her clean energy legacy is also mixed. While the share of renewable energy increased by 36% during her tenure, Germany still operates Europe's dirtiest coal-fired power plants. And by global standards, its citizens have a large carbon footprint. However,
it's a great illusion to think that a little country like Germany can save the planet. The reality is that until you can constrain China, now the second largest economy, the largest if you measure it on a purchasing power parity adjusted basis, China's the key. What Germany does on its own makes no difference. It's irrelevant. Even if the Germans ceased their emissions altogether, permanently shut down their factories and embraced an agricultural future, it would make no difference at all to the future trajectory of average temperatures in the world.
It absolutely makes sense for an industrialized country like Germany to pursue ambitious climate targets. We need to show that prosperity and climate protection are not mutually exclusive. I think it would have sent an important signal to the world. And then no one would have been able to say, no, as an industrialized country, we can't manage such a transformation. We could have done it.
During her leadership, global temperatures continued to rise. When a new generation began demanding action, Merkel backed their call, at least rhetorically. The fight for more efficient climate protection remained a priority until the end of her tenure.
There are those who are actively protesting and pressuring us. But there are also those who are doubtful. It is every government's task to bring everyone on board. Germany is taking on this task. We will make our contribution to a sustainable economy and sustainable way of living worldwide.
She's really emotionally invested in the issue. She truly believes from the bottom of her heart that what's at stake here is humanity's very existence. But she's also pragmatic. She knows what you can and can't get done. And that's why the decisions taken were often nothing more than the lowest common denominator.
I believe I have invested a lot of energy in climate protection. But I still have enough scientific sense to understand that under our current objective circumstances, we can't continue at this pace. We have to step up the tempo.
Meanwhile, something else as invisible as greenhouse gas was mounting to another global crisis. In early 2020, starting in the Chinese city of Wuhan, the coronavirus spread across the world at a breakneck speed. The public health emergency caught the world sorely unprepared. Hundreds of millions have fallen ill, millions have died. Initially hesitant, Merkel imposed restrictions. In a landmark address, she appealed directly to the public.
Dear fellow citizens, the coronavirus is currently changing daily life in our country dramatically. Our idea of normality, of public life, social togetherness, all of this is being put to the test like never before.
The government imposed drastic measures to curb the spread of the virus. Germany went into lockdown, shutting businesses, cultural venues, restaurants and shops. Public life came to a standstill.
This is serious. Please take it seriously. Since German reunification, since the Second World War, there has not been a greater challenge for our country that so depended on our solidarity.
I think she did what she needed to do. She's one of those that took decisive action immediately. And as a matter of fact, I think it worked. She was one of those leaders that really prevented the virus from spreading at a fast rate and got it under control.
I think Chancellor Merkel did shine through because she seemed motherly almost, because she kind of explained things. And we saw how she was explaining things to Germans, you know. And we, from the outside, felt, but we don't see other leaders doing this.
If you look at just the past year and a half, countries that have been led by women have coped far better during this pandemic than others.
In Germany and around the world, the virus claimed many lives and took a heavy social and economic toll. Entire industries were forced to shutter for months. Like other continents, Europe faced severe economic fallout and a further erosion of public trust in government. To shield the EU from both, Angela Merkel broke a German fiscal taboo. Together with French President Emmanuel Macron, she backed a strategy she'd ruled out a decade earlier, collective debt to share the costs of the crisis across the Eurozone.
Europe must stand together. We need a quick economic recovery. And that is why we are proposing a fund worth 500 billion euros.
Angela Merkel came forward and argued that Europe was eine Schicksalsgemeinschaft, a community of fate, and shifted her position on the question of some greater degree of fiscal federalism. Macron's argument was, if Europe did not do this, did not step up in a way that it hadn't during the financial crisis, then Europe would not have a future. The populists would win everywhere. I think it was extremely important in 2020 that Angela Merkel accepted that. That was a big turning point, and it suggested to me that a lesson had been learned from the very messy Eurozone crisis.
Sur toutes les crises que l'Europe a traversées.
Throughout all of the crises that have shaken Europe, she was a representative of European interests.
Prenons l'exemple de la crise de l'euro, de la crise
in the euro crisis, the Greece crisis, and most recently in the pandemic, Merkel always sought solutions that would safeguard Europe's future.
La solution qui va garantir à l'Europe son avenir.
In mid-August 2021, the Taliban took the Afghan capital of Kabul largely without resistance. With this, the ambitious project of the United States and its allies, including Germany, came to an abrupt end. The conflict, which had dragged on for 20 years, was finally catching up with Angela Merkel at the end of her chancellorship.
This is very bitter news. The development is especially bitter, dramatic, and terrible for the people in Afghanistan. This country has suffered again and again in the course of its history.
As of late 2001, the German military and other NATO troops had been deployed along the Hindu Kush to support the US in their fight against the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda terrorist group. Their mission was to bring Afghanistan more security and promote human rights, women's rights, and democratic development. More than 200,000 people lost their lives in the conflict.
It was a mistake to protract the operation for 20 years in the absence of a coherent plan that would have stabilized Afghanistan, stabilized it. I don't say democratized it, I don't say modernized it, but stabilized it.
When Angela Merkel became chancellor in 2005, German troops were already deployed in Afghanistan. She visited the Bundeswehr in the region several times. Merkel supported and justified the mission, even though it cost the lives of 59 German soldiers.
To us, it's important that this country does not fall into the hands of those who would disregard basic rights, prohibit traditions, practices, and endanger world peace. I believe that Afghanistan must take matters into its own hands while also respecting human rights.
With this in mind, NATO troops trained the Afghan army for years, supplying countless weapons. When, in February 2020, Donald Trump announced the withdrawal of US troops from Afghanistan by May 2021, it was clear that all other foreign troops would also leave the country. The new US president, Joe Biden, had extended the withdrawal date to the end of August 2021. But even months before, the Taliban were taking back province after province, thus ended a mission that had been ordered by a different US president 20 years ago.
The Taliban regime is coming to an end.
I think about all the interpreters and people that helped, not only U.S. troops, but NATO troops. And they're just, it seems like they're just going to be left behind to be slaughtered by these very brutal people.
Many former Afghan colleagues of the German military and other Western troops had been requesting visas to leave the country for months. Most of them had been rejected and left to their own fate in Afghanistan.
No one should be able to sleep easy knowing that that has been the outcome of this disastrously ill-planned exit.
Angela Merkel tried to justify the evacuation of Afghan personnel to the German parliament.
It's not too complicated to come up with precise analysis and evaluations in hindsight. Knowing and predicting everything costs fairly little effort.
Das ist relativ mühelos.
Angela Merkel always has an inclination.
Knowing everything in hindsight costs fairly little effort.
And I think in that sense, this sequence of events is not a reflection of her being tired or ready to leave the position of Chancellor. She's been like this from the get-go.
By now, Western troops have completely withdrawn from Afghanistan, leaving behind a country in ruins. Now, after 16 years, the era of Angela Merkel is coming to an end. 16 years in which the German Chancellor faced unprecedented challenges at home, in Europe, and abroad.
It's still a remarkable achievement to have kept the whole thing together and kept it together through probably the most difficult set of years that Europe experienced. There's not much doubt in my mind that people will miss Angela Merkel when she goes.
Angela Merkel will be remembered as a great European stateswoman. She kept the European Union together, despite the numerous crises we experienced.
She will be missed, but she will also be busy. We don't want her to quit. But she's going to be the patron of women all over the world.
I bet a legacy of Angela Merkel is there's a lot of girls who watch Angela Merkel say, I too can have a position of responsibility and power, because she conducted herself with such dignity.
When she goes, there is going to be an enormous hole in the world, and that will be a Merkel hole. But of course, holes always get filled and the world moves on.
The true essence of the Merkel chancellorship is stagnation. The goal was to keep things as they were because Germans were content with the way they were.
Well, I will certainly remember her until I die, but I fear that she's not going to be remembered in history because she didn't have a vision for Europe or for Germany.
She got many things right and did nothing substantially wrong. That's no small compliment.
I don't know what she's planning to do next, but politicians of her caliber never just disappear. She will certainly remain in demand, in one way or another.
I want to take a break and ask myself what I'm most interested in. In the past 16 years, I've had little time to think about things like that, and then I'll try to read a bit, and my eyes will droop because I'm tired, and I'll take a nap, and then let's see where I turn up.